Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Boom! What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Hope you're having a great day. Benjamin Watson, tight end, New Orleans Saints, going to join us. We'll ask him about his quarterback, Drew Brees. We'll also ask him about one of his former quarterbacks, Tom Brady, still getting it done. Benjamin Watson, the Saints, going to join us upcoming in 15 minutes. Daniel Jeremiah will join us. Joel Klatt will join us. We got a lot of football talk. Man, do I love postseason baseball. I should point out, postseason baseball, to me, in comparison to the regular season, I think NBA is probably second, because NBA does have games, what I call cologne games, right? Can't put cologne on every day or every night, but when you do put it on, you know it's a special night. There are regular season games that are played at a high level. It doesn't mean there's not competitive regular season baseball games, but the comparison of every pitch meaning something in the postseason to what it does in the regular season, a ridiculous spike in the intensity. The spike in intensity in baseball from regular season to the postseason is the greatest spike in all of sports. All of sports. And, of course, that begins today in Chicago. Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Let's react to last night where, like the boys all said, the Kansas City Chiefs would win and cover by a half point. I was looking like a genius until the very end. And then I looked like a complete dope. And I could sit here and wax poetic about Patrick Mahomes, who, like Inigo Montoya, is not left-handed. That's because I know something that you do not know. Or I could discuss the fact that once again the Chiefs are off to a hot start and people are making the bold and inaccurate claim that the Chiefs get off to a hot start every year. This happens every year. That's inaccurate. We'll get to that in a second. But I think we're missing one thing, or actually two things that happened last night. Are you familiar with the stat that was broken, or the streak that was broken last night by the Kansas City Chiefs? The Denver Broncos had won 65 consecutive games at home when leading by double digits in the fourth quarter. Like, that's a mouthful, Gottlieb. It is. But it's still a great stat. 65 consecutive times, and they had a double-digit lead in the fourth quarter. They had at least held on to win the game until last night against a guy starting in just his first year in the National Football League. Second year as a player, first year as a full-time starter. But what's missing in the discussion is not Pat Mahomes is awesome. He is. That was actually his worst game as a pro. He was better against the Chargers. He was better against the Steelers. And he was better against the Niners. That was his worst game. People were like, he's amazing. I'm not saying he's not. What I'm saying is that's actually probably the worst he's played so far as a starter through five games starting in the National Football League. That's how good he's been. But the Chiefs' defense has been much maligned, and coming into the weekend, it was the worst-ranked defense in the National Football League. And in order to come from 14 points down, you do know you have to get stopped. 10 points down. You do know you have to get stops. They got two. They got two. Two stops. Matter of fact, their defense kept them in their game while their offense scuttled a bit. Mahomes threw a ball in the third quarter, end of the third quarter, with a seven-point deficit where he just threw it up as a screen pass snuffed out. Should have been intercepted. Like, he didn't play great. And they won because, well, it's double-edged sword. The defense got stops, and Denver overpaid a backup quarterback to be their starting quarterback. Right? The Denver Broncos are the only team in the league to start with three of the first four games at home. They're 2-2 on the season. 2-2. And, oh, yeah, by the way, this puts them behind the Kansas City Chiefs, in, you know, 2.5 games behind the Kansas City Chiefs in their own division, and they still have to go to Kansas City. But to me, the story was Case Keenum's inability to hold a lead, the Denver Broncos' inability to hold a lead. And there you go. That is to me the most stunning thing. The most stunning. Because, look, I thought that Case Keenum was limited, but I thought if you make everything right, then he can at least be a playoff caliber on a really good team like he was on last year with the Minnesota Vikings. He actually went to the NFC Championship game where he got exposed some. And look, some of it's not his fault. They should have given the ball to Royce Freeman more. Royce Freeman had 8.4 yards to carry, but only got the ball 8 times instead. Philip Lindsay got it like 18 times. Why, I'm not so sure. But with everybody salivating, rightfully so, over the arm talent of Pat Mahomes, the perfect storm that is Mahomes. I mean, think about Mahomes in that he's been humbled by losing in college and sitting for a year. He has quality makeup, two-parent home, dad was a pro, all the arm talent in the world, a good athlete, but not a freak athlete where he thinks that he can always beat you with his legs, so he's beating you with his arm and with his head. He's been expertly coached. He studied for just long enough and was put into a team that has made the playoffs consistently and brought in even more elite-level wide receiver talent to showcase his ridiculous, God-given, and matured with quality coaching and hard work physical attributes. Like, all of that is perfect storm. You combine the league making it more quarterback-friendly with all their new rules, with a team that already likes to play fast and loose, a team that for the last 5 years had a quarterback that didn't want to throw the ball downfield. I mean, you cannot get a better perfect storm than Pat Mahomes getting a shot in year two with the talent base that's young with Kansas City and a coach like Andy Reid, who has now he taken a liking to, but has developed less talented quarterbacks in the past. But I think that's been stated on most every radio show. What hasn't is, how can Denver lose that lead? How can you not keep scoring? And against the Kansas City Chiefs. Give some credit to the Chiefs defense. Give a lot of blame to the Denver Broncos offense. But the way in which the Denver Broncos are built with Von Miller and that pass rush is to get a lead and get after the quarterback, and they could barely get to Pat Mahomes. That's the story of last night.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Here's the quote from Le'Veon. I miss football. When I do get back, I plan to give it my all. I still want to go out there and win a Super Bowl for the Steelers. Bell, who's sitting out while refusing to sign, the franchise tender says he's in prime physical condition and could play football tomorrow if needed. He's fully committed. It sucks to have to sit out football. I want to play. I want to win games and the playoffs. But I've got to take this stand. Knowing my worth, knowing I can tear a ligament or get surgery at any time, I knew I couldn't play 16 games with 400 or more touches. Sitting out the entire season was never an option. But he wants to play for the love of the game. I got to show people. I could be naive or hopeful, but at the end of the day, I feel like that's what's going to happen, he said about re-signing with the Steelers. I don't think they really want me gone. That could be me being prideful, but I'm still holding out hope. It's costing me some fans. A lot of people are calling me selfish. I'm really not. I'm doing it for the guys behind me. And for guys who don't understand what's going on in the business, the 22 years I've been playing football, I've always brought value. I don't think the Steelers valued me as much. But it is curious that here's a guy who said, or his agent said, hey, week 10, all of a sudden he's there week 7. I don't think my body could hold up for 400 touches, but I thought you weren't like any other running back. I thought you were more valuable. I thought you could, either you are or you are not. I think there's a reason you put up those numbers. There's a reason that you can't have 75 catches in a 65-game season and have, you know, 16, 1,700 yards rushing unless you touch the ball a lot. That's just the way it works. There has to be a volume of touches. And if you're not willing to do that, then we can't pay you that much. The Steelers don't value me. They're going to pay you $14.5 million if you would have showed up every game this year. So I don't fault Le'Veon Bell. I think he's kidding himself if he thinks he's really in football shape after working out in Florida. And while he may try and make himself out to be some sort of heroic figure, look, I'm doing this for the business of football. Like, no, you're not. You're doing it so you get a long-term contract when you're getting, this is your last long-term deal. This is it. This is it. They're cutting you off after this deal. Once you get to 30, it's like, yeah, we got a couple of guys. We got Frank Gore. Maybe Adrian Peterson keeps it up. We got like three or four guys, five guys who after 30 have still been really productive. For the most part, you're not that productive. For the most part. But there are guys that have been productive until they're 30. And he knows this is his last. He is not doing this for anybody other than Le'Veon Bell. Right? That's why everything he's saying here is 100% a lie. I'm not saying that he doesn't miss football, but that's not why he's coming back. He says, he says he's fully committed. No, he's not. If he's fully committed, he would have shown up to workouts. I want to play. I want to win games. Never has that been a part of the discussion. The Steelers should ultimately win more games if they have a healthy Le'Veon Bell, but that's not what this is about. This has never been about winning and losing. This has only been about money. That's all it's ever been about. I think Le'Veon Bell would have a better chance of winning in the public if he was simply honest. Look, I held out. I'm trying to elongate my career. I'm rolling the dice here, and I'm going to show up a little bit earlier so I can make a little bit more money than if I showed up in week 10. That's it.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
He is the analyst for the Chargers Radio Network, and of course, you see him on the NFL Network. You download his podcast, Move the Sticks, along with Bucky Brooks, another one of our friends. He's the one and only Daniel Jeremiah. He joins us on the Doug Gottlieb Show. I want to talk about Mahomes in a second, but I feel like what's being missed in our love affair with Mahomes, that was his worst game as a starter. They're down double digits on the road in Denver, and Denver can't score against the worst defense in the NFL. Does that show the limitations of Case Keenum, or did the Kansas City Chiefs defense change all of a sudden?
Kansas City Chiefs defense is not good. I mean, I saw them up close and personal already this season. I've watched all their games on tape. I don't think it's a good defense. So I would probably tend to put that more on Case Keenum, kind of having a little bit of a, hard ceiling. It's not particularly high. So I think I would put that a little bit more on them in that Denver Broncos offense. But man, all the attention I think has gone to Mahomes, and rightfully so, for what he did to bring them back and find a way to win that football game.
What impresses you most?
You know, it's interesting to me is just how much he's grown from when he was in college to what he's doing right now, just fundamentally. We see some of the wild plays. The left-handed throw is going to get all the attention. But when he's playing under control, I mean, he's playing at a really, really high level. He's getting his feet in the ground. Just even simple things, just his drop is cleaner. It was a free for all at Texas Tech.
Yeah, he did not have good footwork. He did not. You and I talked about before the draft. Like, he had a great arm, but he just looked kind of sloppy back there in how he stood and how he looked, and he just sees something open and just kind of fling the football.
Yeah, it was. We used to joke. Me and Bucky used to joke about it. When you watched the offense in college, it was all screens and scrambles. It was one or the other every single time. With him drifting, falling away, wasn't taking a crisp drop at all. And you know, you give Andy Reid credit for identifying the talent and then being able to be a good teacher and to get his footwork where it needs to be. And now, you know, one thing, meeting with him before the draft, we met with him. He came in maybe 10 days before the draft. And he had outstanding recall and just a really, really intelligent guy. So you kind of see now, you look back on it and say, okay, he's a really smart kid who's got unbelievably raw tools, and he went to the absolutely perfect spot for him.
I agree. That's the other part. Perfect storm, right? League continues to make the quarterback, you know, a guy that you got to be careful how you touch him. They go out and overspend on Sammy Watkins to add to Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce, and they had the league's leading rusher who's not making a bunch of money in just his second year, so he's still fresh to the days. Like, and Andy Reid, and he got to sit for a year and learn. I mean, all these things kind of coming together at just the right time. It is the perfect storm.
Yeah, it's interesting, Doug, too. Just, we're seeing all these numbers, and everybody keeps posting all these numbers about some most prolific offensive start to a season we've ever had in the NFL, the numbers, the yards, the points, all of that stuff are sky high. And I was just, you know, maybe 30 minutes ago talking to an executive from a team, and he said it's amazing when you watch the league right now. He said you can't hit receivers, you can't hit the quarterback. Every other deep ball, there's a flag for pass interference. Now anything that was even remotely considered, is it a catch, is it not a catch? The answer is always it's a catch now because of the update to that rule, which I know a lot of people like. But he's like, man, every single rule has been updated to just tilt the scale in favor of the offense right now. This is just the beginning, man. This is, get ready. This is what the NFL is right now.
It's exactly what I said on Cowherd. That's why I said you can't compare stats to generation. I mean, more plays, no, more offense, like everything is just obscene by comparison.
Yeah. Well, that's what's out there. You know, we see all these comps. It is a totally different game. I mean, even, you know, in the scouting standpoint, we had, when we had Ed Reed when I was in Baltimore, Ed was an unbelievable ball hawk, but Ed was also a presence over the middle. I mean, if you float a ball over the middle to a tight end, it was a massive collision. And so you could discourage some of those throws. Now there's absolutely nothing to discourage those throws. So it's a fun, I enjoy it. Look, I enjoy it. It's fun. I'm an offensive guy. It's fun to watch. But it's different. You got to acknowledge that it's apples and oranges when you're trying to compare it to previous generations.
Do you think it balances out as the season goes on? Because it's always been said, like, hey, the most physical team usually wins in the Super Bowl because they don't want a bunch of flags in the Super Bowl. But what about when we get kind of deeper into the season?
Well, I think weather is the one thing that you don't know. I mean, that's the one unknown. You know, that's one thing with Kansas City I'm anxious to see. Now, they have a really good running game when they want to use it. You saw Kareem Hunt get loose a little bit in that game. I think he'll become a more part of everything as it gets a little bit colder. But, no, I really don't see it in terms of the way the game's going to be called and what we're going to see. We saw a Super Bowl last year with over 1,000 yards offense. I mean, it's what it is right now.
Daniel Jeremiah joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. My issue with Frank Reich going forward is this. Time, score, you know, like we have this thing where, well, ties are bad. Okay. You know, the fact is that the Browns shouldn't have tied the Steelers. Both teams should have made field goals and the thing would have been over, right? The Browns, you know, probably should have forced overtime with the Saints if not for the field goal kicker. Packers kicker, you know, missed a field goal. Like, teams weren't playing for ties. Ties just happened. So this idea that a tie is bad, it's 24 seconds to go. It is just, even if you got the first down, you're not necessarily winning the game. This is a worse move than Bill Belichick at his own 30 against the Colts, you know, years ago, going for it on fourth down, where if you just get 1 yard, you win the game. You had to get 4 yards, and even then you probably had to complete two more passes before you kick a field goal. I feel like it was they saved the Texans' season and may have cost themselves ultimately a shot at the playoffs. Did you like Frank Reich's decision?
Well, I just look at it from this standpoint. You know, we talk about where they were on the field To me, it wasn't about where they were on the field. It's about where they are as an organization. And I think it's Frank Reich. It's year one. I think if you gave some truth serum to that organization from the front office down to the field, they would say we're not a playoff caliber team right now. So I think it's year one. It's kind of one of those statements. It's kind of an identity. It's a culture, whatever you want to call it, but just of an aggressive nature. That's what they're trying to instill there. Obviously, everybody's pointed back to his time in Philadelphia and Doug Peterson being ultra aggressive. I just think it's year one. If this was year two for him and they feel like they have a playoff caliber team, I think you make probably the more prudent decision, the smart decision, and you punt that football. But I just think this is a year one early on in this regime, and he's just trying to establish that, you know, culture, for lack of a better word.
Speaking of Philadelphia, what's wrong with the Eagles?
Well, they can't block and they can't cover. Other than that, there's no issues. They're not playing good up front, and they have a very talented offensive line. Their tackles are not playing well. Lane Johnson did not play well. There was some miscommunication even between the backs and the offensive line. So Carson Wentz, he's getting hit way too much. And then on the back end of the defense, man, they had so many long yardage situations that they allowed. They're just not playing well at the corner position right now. And there is some ability there. I know Jalen Mills, there's some concern there just with his lack of deep speed, top speed. But Darby's not playing up to his level, and we're seeing a young kid from Washington coming back off that Achilles injury. He's not playing at a very high level right now either. So they've got issues. They've got issues up front. I think will be solved. I think they have the right guys on the offensive line. That'll get fixed in time. The secondary, to me, is a legitimate long-term concern.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. That's the voice of Daniel Jeremiah from the NFL Network. Cowboys got the ball to Ezekiel Elliott a bunch, some in the screen game, some by handing off to them. Have they fixed their issues?
I think they played a bad team. The Lions team, this is a Lions team that the Jets torched. So I think there's some issues on that side of the ball. Now, one thing, a guy like Joe Looney, who I'm sure many folks don't know about, is a center filling in for Travis Frederick, played really well in that game. He did a nice job. The whole offensive front did a nice job controlling the line of scrimmage. That's kind of the formula that they have to use. When they can run the ball like that, take some of that pressure off Dak, simplify things, and get Zeke going in the passing game, that's their formula for them to win games. But at the end of the day, I think that was more than likely an 8-8 team beating a 7-9 team is what that was.
Daniel Jeremiah joining us. What about the Patriots?
They're going to be fine. They're going to be just fine. You know, it was interesting. The whole league, we're talking about this explosion of offense, spreading people out, getting the shotgun, screens, bubbles, shovels, all that stuff. What do the Patriots do? They get under center. Sony Michel ran the ball 25 times in that game. All 25 times were with Tom Brady under center. 19 of those 25 times with a fullback in front of him. And they got physical up front at the line of scrimmage. And then defensively, they did not allow the ball to sail over their heads. They played discipline. And while they might lack some personnel on the defensive side of the ball, that's the Bill Belichick way of doing business. You're going to bend. You're not going to break. You're going to be able to slow people down once they get on your side of the 50 and don't give up explosives. And that's what they did. And now they get Edelman back. You know, they'll have him with Gronk, a run game that's improved. Sony Michel is going to continue to expand his role. And they're going to get, four games against rookie quarterbacks inside their division? They're going to be just fine.
Great stuff. Daniel Jeremiah joining us. Last thing, you got the Raiders coming in, as you're going to call it, the Charger game. Raiders have led at the half against the Rams before they collapsed, led in the fourth quarter their next two games, and then a wild game against the Browns. What are your thoughts on Gruden now? We've seen him four games.
Well, I think it's a little bit of a roller coaster now. We've seen, the explosive element in this offense, being able to score points, move the ball up and down the field. They don't have a closer on the defensive side of the ball, which, I think that storyline's a little bit tired. We all know where he is now. I think you're seeing it. Some people maybe wondered, had the game passed him by offensively? I don't think that's the case. They're moving the ball up and down the field. They just got to find a way to finish games. And this one, maybe with a little bit of help from some questionable calls, they were able to get that done.
Great stuff, TJ. Daniel Jeremiah, download the Move the Sticks podcast and check him out on the NFL Network or on the Chargers broadcast. DJ, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, bud. See you, man.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Joel Klatt joins us, lead college football analyst for Fox Sports and Fox Sports 1. I want to talk football with you for a second, but how close did you come to the bigs?
That's a good question. I would say not very, but I mean, maybe it was closer than I thought. I played a couple of double-A games, and then for a week in triple-A, this is actually a good story, a week in spring training, I played triple-A ball because Sean Burroughs, the normal third baseman, got injured who was playing triple-A. So I went up to take his spot, played third base, hit second in the lineup for 1 week. The next day, guess who they signed to a minor league deal? Ricky Henderson. So for 1 week, I hit two-hole behind Ricky Henderson, which was awesome.
That is pretty cool. Did he talk about himself in third person?
100% referred to himself in first person or third person. And every time he would go up to the plate, Doug, he would always like look back at me, and he would tell me a number. He'd be like, 2, 3. Ricky needs 3. And I'd be like, what? Like, what in the world is he talking about? I had no idea what he was talking about. And I'd go up there and just take my normal at bat. So finally, a couple of games in, I go up to our manager. His name was Jeff Gardner, and I was like, Skip, why in the world does Ricky keep telling me a number before he goes up to hit? And he's like, oh, hey, Rook, that's how many pitches he wants you to take so he can steal second.
that's Ricky.
That's right.
Now, what position did you play?
Third base.
Man, hot corner pass. Those suckers come down like they're fired out of a cannon.
You ain't lying.
So did you not make it because you couldn't hit or because you couldn't field?
No, I was a good fielder and I was a decent hitter, but you got to understand, you got to be so good.
Yes.
Like 2% of the minor leaguers make it, and I just did not hit off speed pitches well enough. I could hit the fastball, didn't matter how fast, 98, I could catch up to it. But man, Uncle Charlie would come and I was folding.
You were Serrano, basically, right? You needed a hat for your bat.
I hit straight ball very much.
Yeah. Joe Klatt joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. It's not that I didn't like the play call for Penn State. It was you called timeout, and that's what you came up with. And look, I think James Franklin's done a really good job. They might well win a national championship there. They almost won a Rose Bowl there. But to the James Franklin is not that great a coach and really good recruiter and a really good guy crowd, that last play for Penn State didn't help him.
It definitely fell flat. It fell flat. And Doug, the hard part is that you had such a great play caller leave, and now he's the head coach at Mississippi State. And so you got a young guy that hasn't had a lot of experience. His name's Ricky Ronnie, the offensive coordinator. And it's really his decision. James Franklin and Trace McSorley, by the way, have said exactly what they should after a game, after the heat of the moment, and said, hey, it's a group decision. We all thought it was there. And to some extent, yes, that's true. James Franklin is the buck stops here type of guy. But, you know, that's a tough deal for Ricky and really his first large environment as the play caller. That's just, I've always believed, and I think you probably would have this sentiment in basketball, you've got to go down with your best punches. You've got to. You cannot go down giving the ball to somebody that is not who got you there. And Trace McSorley needed the ball in his hands, on the edge,
yep,
run pass options,
yep,
in some form or fashion, because he was having an unbelievable game.
Yeah, he was having an unbelievable game. What is this? Does this make you, like, I have come out of every college football weekend, it hasn't been that many, 4 in fact, but I've come out of the 3 previous ones thinking it's Alabama, Ohio State, Georgia, and then we'll fight over the whoever the 4th team is. Between Haskins looking a kind of shell-shocked at the pressure that he was seeing from Penn State, and Ohio State had 2 dynamic pass rushers. Now they don't have Bosa. They still had a dynamic pass rush. I'm not sure that Ohio State's still in that class. Am I overreacting to 1 road game?
I think so, and let me just, I'm going to harken it back to something that you'll definitely understand. At times, it's not always about the overarching, can you be dominant all the time, but it's about winning in a place that's really hard to win, regardless of how you do it. And I think that place and that environment is one of those deals. I mean, they needed the the Bosa sack a few years ago to win on the walk-off sack. They needed, they got the kick blocked and then taken back for them and lost that game a couple of years ago. Now they're able to get the play. There are some locations, and I'm sure you had those locations when you're playing at Oklahoma State, that you go there and it almost doesn't matter how you win. It's just whether you win at all. And I think Penn State is one of those locations for Ohio State. Now, you could be right because, yes, everything you said was true. I think without Bosa, they're not nearly as dangerous. But keep in mind, they went into Penn State where Trace McSorley was undefeated as a starting quarterback without their best player on their roster and still won. That's, you could say, even regardless of how Haskins looked at times on third down, that's almost more impressive. So I think both sides of that coin could certainly be read, Doug.
What if LSU actually has a quarterback, right? Like,
oh, that's dangerous, man. I thought that they couldn't play offense out of a wet paper bag before last week, and now all of a sudden Joe Burrow's putting up the number 4 total offense game in their school's history. It's like, what's going on? 292 through the air, 96 on the ground, and all of a sudden that guy looks like he's the type of player that's going to lead them to a win against Auburn, lead them to a win against Mississippi State, and potentially be a real threat against Alabama. I thought that Alabama was walking with that division. With the way that Auburn has played offensively, with the way that LSU had played offensively, and the fact that Joe Moorhead's Mississippi State crew couldn't do anything last week, I thought this was just going to be a walk. But maybe LSU's got something that we don't know about, and namely a quarterback, because he did not get there all that soon, if you will. So he hasn't had a lot of time in that offense. And the more that they get rhythm, maybe they can put something together because you know they're talented on defense.
So I guess the same thing for Notre Dame, right? Like I never thought Winbush could really throw the football, and I think people didn't pay attention to that Michigan game. They had no offense at all in the second half, and even the first half's helped out by a couple of calls and a 50-50 ball catch. But Ian Book appears to be a guy that can spin it, and it gives it gives them something they haven't had in a while. How legitimate is Notre? I know, like, schedule-wise, if they can survive Virginia Tech, they'll probably be there. But how legitimate are they in comparison to the Ohio States, Clemsons, Alabamas, Georgias of the world?
Well, I think that you can easily say that Notre Dame has been more impressive than Clemson. Now, whether you think Notre Dame is better than Clemson or not, that remains to be seen. But wouldn't you agree they've been more impressive?
Yeah, of course.
Of course they have. Their resume has been better. The Ian Book, his inclusion in the lineup has been outstanding in the last couple of weeks. And you mentioned it. Their schedule, you know, point at the game that they're losing. If they win this weekend in Blacksburg, who's beating them? Outside of an injury, I mean, it's going to take an upset and maybe a drastic one for someone to beat them. USC's not beating that team if they're playing at full capacity.
Nope.
I am worried about the injury to the offensive tackle. Alex Bars, their really good offensive tackle, is out for the season with an injury, and that's going to affect them. I wonder how effective they're going to be on the ground, because remember, Ian Book has done this with a really effective ground game as well. Can he do it when the entirety of the offense is on his shoulder? I think that remains to be seen. But I think looking at their schedule, I just don't know who's beating them. I really don't.
Joel Klatt joining us in the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Navy plays him in San Diego. I don't like that one. Syracuse. I mean, they nearly pulled off. Speaking of Syracuse, Trevor Lawrence gets hurt, and obviously last week we talked about Kelly Bryant. But what's missing with Clemson? Like, I know they came back and won that game with their defense, and they showed how much talent they have around a quarterback. But even when Lawrence was playing, they were losing to Syracuse. What's missing with Clemson?
Almost everything, Doug. They remind me so much of the 2014 Florida State team. Remember that team coming off from the national championship, and we all just thought, well, we know they're good. Yeah, we know they're good. And they went through a really easy ACC schedule and ended up being into the playoff, and Oregon ran them out of the building in the Rose Bowl.
Right.
If you
remember. I remember,
this feels like that year to me. Clemson just doesn't have it. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's chemistry or leadership or whatnot. We know they have explosive players. We know their defense is really good, but you cannot make an argument that they've been anywhere as nearly as impressive as teams like LSU or Notre Dame or Georgia or even Oklahoma, or certainly a team like Ohio State or Alabama, you know, of those teams. And everyone just keeps leaving them up there. If they make the playoff, even as an undefeated, I think it's the ultimate confirmation bias pick. Very similar to 14 with Florida State.
Yeah,
they just aren't that good right now.
Yeah, Texas kind of before the roof fell in on Mac. Like even that Texas team that lost when Colt got hurt in the championship game, that team wasn't as good as the previous incarnations of Texas. That was all built upon kind of Colt McCoy, and then slowly it regressed from there. West Virginia, Joel Klatt joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show. West Virginia has two impressive wins on paper, right? Tennessee to start the year, and they just went into Texas Tech, who had walloped Oklahoma State the week before. Now, the NC State game, and NC State's undefeated, and they got Ryan Finney, who's an NFL-caliber quarterback. That's a game we won't see. And we're not going to see them. They're not going to play anybody until November. But November, they go to Texas. Texas looks like they're figuring it out. TCU, that's not as bad as their last two, as the final scores of the last two games. Oklahoma State on the road and Oklahoma at home. You know, obviously, Will Greer's a super talent. They have offense. But are they good enough to run through that, what's going to be a five-game string? Because they got to win those four and then win the Big 12 championship.
Well, they got to get there first, and I do believe they will. I think they're going to be 7-0, probably ranked in the probably 4 or 5 in the playoff poll, playoff ranking when they go to Texas, and that's going to be the first real deal. If they stay healthy, I think that they're primed to go through that gauntlet and do pretty well. I think their defense is actually better than people think. You know, headed into last week, they were actually the number one scoring defense in the country. Now, they dropped down a bit, but that's a Texas Tech team that has been putting up massive yards and massive points on everybody, including Oklahoma State, like you said, the previous week. So I think West Virginia's defense is actually a little better than you would expect. They're top 20 right now in scoring defense, and that's an offense that you know is going to put up points. Will Greer is going to be right in the thick of the Heisman race, and they're going to be probably fourth or fifth in the country traveling to Austin, Texas, November 3rd. That's going to be quite a story because this is the best chance Dana Holgorsen's had as a Big 12 title in his tenure there in Morgantown.
Joel Klatt joins us. Where are you this week?
Red River, baby.
Oh, the state fair.
So good.
Likelihood Texas beats him.
Well, let me put it to you this way. That defensive coordinator, Todd Orlando at Texas, is the same coordinator that when he was at Houston beat Oklahoma.
Yep.
Last year held Oklahoma to under 30 points. There's something about this matchup that is not beneficial to Oklahoma, and it has to do with the schematics of that defense. And so I would not be surprised at all if this is a lower scoring game than you would expect, and I won't be surprised at all if Texas is close or within or even leading late in the ballgame.
Yeah. And look, I thought losing Rodney Anderson hurt you, and I do think you put so much on Kyler Murray's shoulders. That occasionally that can be a gift and a curse, right? Like he tries to make too many plays in this game. A kid from Texas never lost a high school game. I don't know. I'd be fascinated to see exactly how this plays out. Well, listen, enjoy Dallas. Hopefully the weather cooperates, and we'll talk to you soon.
You got it, bud. Have a good one.
All right, that's Joel Klatt joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show.